This is Professor Allen, and welcome to the Quarter Bin. In every episode of this podcast, I will summarize, criticize, discuss, and review a single issue from my comic book collection, which I will select based on the genre assigned to the month of release. Any book from my comic book collection is eligible, as long as I paid no more than 25 cents for it. Was the issue worth 25 cents? Was it a bargain at 25 cents? Or was it still overpriced? Stay tuned and find out. For this 188th episode of the Quarter Bin Podcast, in celebration of hashtag Holiday Comics Month, we're looking at, I know, this surprised me too, Fantastic Four 361 from Marvel Comics, cover dated February 1992. We are going to forego feedback in this episode and double up on that next time, because there's a story that needs to be told. A story about two of my favorite things, receiving gifts and Doctor Doom. Actually, it's three of my favorite things, because we have a guest for this segment. Someone who hasn't been on the Quarter Bin since the epic episode 100. It's M.
Hi, Internet.
Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, too.
Miss podcasting with you.
Yeah. Life.
Life happens.
Life happens. Life keeps going and it don't stop going
Oh, boy. 2022 has been a whole different kind of stress and strain and weirdness from 2021 and 2020, which people may remember. Had their own stresses and strains and traumas, but here we are, persevering.
Persevering.
So, let me tell my side of the story, and then you can jump in and tell yours. So, back in November, when I had a birthday, one of the presents was from you, and it was a brick, 7-8 pounds. 3 inches thick. Clearly a book. I mean, it's hard to disguise a book when you wrap a present. And anyway, I do know where you work, which is the coolest bookstore in Columbus.
Yeah, basically.
But I couldn't come up with any idea of what the book could be. The only thing I was familiar with this shape and size was something like the Baseball Encyclopedia. So I was trying to figure out what big, thick book you could be giving me. An encyclopedia for my soccer fandom? North London's Arsenal? Or something comic book related, like DC Encyclopedia? The printed out version of Mike's Amazing World? I could not figure it out. And then as I began to open the gift, I did see the Marvel logo. And I thought, I believe I said this out loud.
You definitely did.
I mean, well, this can't be the Doctor Doom book. And let me explain why I said that. Because I knew the list price of the Doctor Doom Omnibus, the Book of Doom, was $125. Way too much for me to pay for it. And yes, Em, I know you love me. But I think I've raised you better than to pay triple digits for a gift, even for dear old dad.
And even if it's Doom.
Even if it's Doom. But this was the Doctor Doom Omnibus, the Book of Doom. And many lovely listeners sent me the links when this was solicited back at the start of the year. And then when it was released sometime in the summer. I mean, this thing is huge. Every significant Doom appearance and story. Em, could you grab that? Just Let me just open this up to the table of contents. What page does the last story start on?
That would be page 1,286.
So yes, 1,300 pages of Doom goodness. Thank you. Woo. Like I said, huge. But I still had to know. Em, how did you pull this off? And please don't tell me you paid full price.
So first of all, I would never pay full price for a book.
Oh, thank you. That is all music to my ears.
One of the perks of working in the industry, the book biz.
At the Book Loft of German Village, Columbus's coolest independent bookstore.
A bookstore unlike any other.
32 rooms of books.
500,000 titles at a time. And one of them was the Book of Doom. Now, the thing about ordering comic books is that they go through a different distributor. There's right. some stuff, you know, Marvel and DC and Diamond versus Simon and Schuster. There's a whole thing involved there as far as the ordering and the distribution and the publishing and the shipping of books. So it means that giant omnibuses like these don't really make sense to stock.
Right.
And because they are, in fact, so heavy that you pay nearly as much as the price of the book to ship the book to the place you're going to sell it.
And I'm thinking just literally on a shelf, it probably squeezes out, I mean, literally, 5 trade paperbacks?
Easily.
That would be priced at reasonable prices and might actually fly off the shelves. So the one that you got was a special order.
Exactly.
Is that right? This was not something that, in the ordinary course of business, the store would choose to shelf.
And in full disclosure, if anybody wants to buy a copy, we are not going to be buying another. Because the reason that I acquired this is that when it was solicited, somebody ordered it specifically through us because they wanted to support our business. It was great news. Problem is, because it was in demand, and because it's so big, and because it's such an unwieldy book, the times to actually get it got delayed and delayed and delayed.
And we know there were shipping issues, supply chain issues, and your version of this book from whatever miscellaneous distributor got all caught up in that.
Indeed. So it was a situation where we called a couple times. Thank you for your patience. I promise it's on its way. Thank you for your patience. I promise it's on its way. Eventually, 6 months after ordering said book, the person called us back and said, hey, I've been told a couple of times now. It's going to be 2 months. And I called back after 2 months. And I was told it's going to be another 2 months. And I'll call back again. I think it's cool, but I'm just kind of done.
I assume they may have picked it up somewhere along the line that had it.
Possible. They might have been able to find another copy somewhere else. Completely understandable.
So ended up canceling the order.
And on our side, gave them back their money and called it a day. Problems showed up after the fact.
Because the book showed up after the fact.
Yeah. So we went and immediately checked, like, oh, I wonder where this thing is. And I wonder if we could actually cancel our order, considering we don't actually really want it.
Yeah.
No, turns out that it had shipped that day from Oklahoma and was going to be in the store in 3 days. And that was really annoying to be like, man, we were that close. We could have just wrapped this whole thing up. It would have taken a long time, but it would have been done. And then we looked at the book itself and saw that because it was so incredibly expensive and unwieldy, it was not returnable.
And even if it had been returnable via the publisher, the cost-benefit analysis of you paying the shipping would have made it unprofitable.
As a result, this thing was going to just sit on our shelf until somebody was dumb enough to pay $125 for it. Or in my case, somebody was dumb enough to spend about $75 on it and immediately take it out of the store before anyone else even saw it.
Hello, employee discount. The way you said it was something like the manager just in frustration kind of said, I mean, come on. Who is going to want this?
Who is going to want this thing? And I said,
and slowly raises their hands. I think I know somebody.
I looked at that and it was as soon as he started complaining, just what are we going to do with this thing? We're not going to have space for it. Because this was about 2.5 months ago. We've already purchased so many Sandman omnibus.
Right.
So many Marvel Encyclopedia. We literally have no physical space for this thing. Invincible Complete Compendium just came out. There is literally no place that we can put this thing. And even if we did put it somewhere, who's going to buy it?
It is big. It is unwieldy.
And it's doomed.
It is heavy. And it's the maligned,
unfairly
misunderstood Dr. Doom. And so, yes, You smuggled it out of the store.
In that moment, I said, ah, well, you know what? There is one other person in this city who would be desperate to get his hands on this book. And I gotta say, judging purely based on the face that you made when you unwrapped it on your birthday, was right.
Yay, thank you, Em. And that's the story of how I got the Doctor Doom Omnibus, the Book of Doom. And I think there's a lesson here, especially for parents. I'm thinking, you know, parents of teenagers, and by teenagers I mean, you know, anyone from 9 to 23. You know, that troubling age. Because, you know, you're not always going to get along. You're going to misunderstand. There's going to be all sorts of drama. But if you keep your unconditional love happening, maintain the relationship, one day, when this kid reaches an age that maybe starts with a 3, I'm not promising this, but maybe they'll use their employee discount to give you the best gift ever at a fairly reasonable price. Boom, M, you are awesome.
And very discount conscious.
Thank you, and thank you. I can read the book with a clear conscience now. And by the way, Doom Speak episodes for as long as the eye can see. Thank you again.
You're welcome.
One great kid, pretty good adult too. So it is time to take a break here. And just as the doomness continues to roll on, because when we come back, we will jump into our fantastic, doomtastic, hashtag holiday comics month selection. And we'll trade out M for a different internet and podcasting buddy of mine.
Between the golden age of Atlantis and the rise of recorded history, there were ages undreamed of. Hither came heroes and villains possessing swords and magic, whose deeds became tales and legends. I have come to relate these sagas. Let me tell you of the days of high adventure. Days of High Adventure, a new podcast discussing a variety of comics that fall into the fantasy or sword and sorcery genre. Available on most podcast services and Anchor FM.
And we're back. And by we, I don't just mean me and my collection of awesome green cloaks, because I'm joined by a buddy for this one. You know him as Big Five Army from Twitter, the man who takes his wife to Ollie's on date night. It's Kirk Spencer.
Well, hello, all. I am a romantic at heart, you know.
It's true. Glad to have you here.
I'm glad to be here.
To me, I think of you as much more of a DC guy than Marvel. Is that the case?
If I had to choose one, it would certainly be DC. And that's mostly because of the DC War line, because the War right. comics are my bread and butter. But for superheroics, I tend to lean more Marvel.
Okay.
And a lot of that comes from my sainted mother, who bought me a box of Marvel Bronze Age books when I was a wee lad at the Salvation Army. 300 comics for $10, including Amazing Spider-Man 129, which at the time was worth a few bucks, but nothing like what it is now. But
nice.
They had good runs of most of the Marvel titles, including Fantastic Four, which was one of my earliest exposures to the title.
Nice. Moms are awesome.
My collection benefited greatly because Mom was addicted to thrift stores and flea markets and yard sales.
Perfect.
And if she found comics, she would usually get me at least one, maybe all, depending on the prices and if she was getting anything else. And sometimes if my dad was there. His dad would say, one's enough.
That's which is why moms are awesome.
Yes.
So you've got some Fantastic Four history. So let me ask you this. On a scale from, say, on one side, totally epic, to the other side being completely awesome, where would you rank Dr. Doom in terms of greatest, most important comic characters of all time?
Doom obliterates the scale because he is our benevolent ruler.
Thank you.
There is no other character in comics like Doom to me. If it weren't for that accursed Reed Richards, more people would know the name Dr. Doom.
That is very true. Come on. Dr. Doom, Sergeant Rock. It's the crossover that people have been begging for.
We need Amalgam to return, and that's what we need, is a team-up of Dr. Doom and Sergeant Rock.
Let's make it. Because
even
so.
Doom would probably fight against the Nazis.
Yes. Thank you.
You're not going to take over Latveria without a fight.
Now, this is our hashtag Holiday Comics Month issue. So, you know, in terms of the holidays, even though we're recording right before Thanksgiving, where does Christmas rank for you and the Spencers?
My birthday is very close to Christmas.
Ah, so you're one of them.
As a little kid, it kind of lost some of the luster with the combo gift. Everybody else would get two, and I'd get the one from the visiting family.
Your birthday being overshadowed by, you know, the saviors.
Yes, I mean, he offers us eternal life in heaven and paradise if we would just accept him. But, you know, at the time, I wanted two G.I. Joe figures and not just one.
Yeah, I get you.
You know, it's priorities when you're nine. It's always been special to me. And my dad was one of those who struggled with the holiday. And I never understood it, because to me, it was just magical. You're more focused on the blessings of Christ, and you also get presents. I mean, how can you not be happy with that?
In your collection of FF, was this in that collection, or was this already in your collection when we agreed that this would be our comic to cover?
This comic brings back fond memories, because there was a period of time when New England Comics, which was my main mail order source in the 80s, because I've rarely had access to a comic shop.
Oh, Kirk, this could be a problem, because I was a Mile High guy. So,
well, now Mile High got my first order.
Okay. Okay. England, I'll allow it.
New England shipped so much faster. And as an 80s kid who was watching his penny, every comic came bagged and boarded from New England Comics.
Nice, nice. That's worth a good 7 cents.
It was. It was a huge deal. And they offered some 50% off promotion. I don't remember if it was for new customers or what the deal was, but it was limit one per customer, supposedly. But I hadn't quite found my moral path at that point in life. And I decided, well, everybody I know is ordering 50% off from New England Comics as long as this coupon is valid. And my girlfriend at the time lived in Atlanta, and she told me I had a giant box from New England Comics, and I had ordered a bunch of boxes because at that time my collection had just overfilled every bookcase my parents had bought.
Yep.
And I really needed some boxes. I bought boxes, and in that box among the comics was this issue of Fantastic Four.
Nice.
So I got it for half off the $1.25 cover price from New England Comics.
That's
bagged and boarded.
That's close. That's I'll allow it.
And back then there was no tax on mail order purchases. So
even better.
It was even better.
So for prepping for this, you are looking at the actual physical copy?
I am.
The one made out of dead trees. Awesome.
Indeed. Awesome.
Now, I mentioned this in passing already, but I do want to give you a chance to brag about your qualifications to appear here on the Quarterbin podcast. You've done pretty well with the 50% off and the multiple use cheating on the coupon. I respect that. But you have also managed to convince your wife, an actual female person of ladiness, that you taking her to Ollie's to buy cheap comics counts as a date. You are a legend. Now, explain your magic.
It's really been helped by our project of working on restoring my grandparents' home. My wife has really fallen in love with the home. It's a mid-century modern built around 1960. And to offset some of the expenses, we've been renting it as an Airbnb. And so she is constantly looking for pictures to hang up.
Right.
She needs new towels for the bedroom. She wants a new rug to cover up over here. Oh, we need a TV stand. So Ollie's, God bless them, they'll send an occasional 15% off coupon or something. So even though the closest location is about an hour away, we will make a little road trip, make it a date night, pick up some Jersey Mike subs while we're there, because, you know, I am a romantic at heart.
That is true. And this confirms that claim of yours.
She will pick up, you know, the things she wants for the house, because I have learned that, for the most part, my opinion does not matter, even though it's a family home on my side. It does not matter. So it means an awful lot more to her. And I'm just happy going with a pretty girl to look at comics. So she gets what she wants. And, you know, I'm in comic nerd heaven.
It's a win-win-win.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. That is great. I love those pictures on Twitter. She's not always smiling. And anyway, but that's not important.
She does not enjoy having her picture taken. And she is the oddest girl in that she doesn't think she's pretty. I would rate her up there with, you know, the best of the best, in my opinion. If there was a catalog of babes, she would be on my order form.
Mount Rushmore of hotness. Okay, I got you.
You know, I'm very thankful that she has given the time to a nerd like me. And I just hope it continues to last.
I believe that is a case of so say we all.
Yes.
So say we all. Well, speaking of Christmas blessings.
I see what you did there.
Fantastic Four 361 at a cover price of $1.25, meaning I got this comic at an 80% markdown, which I believe is better than 50%, even if you throw in a bag and a board, and though I did have to pay sales tax.
Well,
it's pretty close.
With that dreaded tax, I'd say you beat me on that one.
The cover by Paul Ryan and Danny Bullinati shows a Christmas scene on Yancey Street with the Thing facing down a gang of young toughs. And above it all is Dr. Doom doing what he does best. More like Dr. Loom.
Yes, indeed.
He is.
Hail Doom.
He is looming. Yes. Hail Doom indeed. Now, this cover does have a DeFalco pizza, a reference to the story's writer. And there's also Mac Ray Movers, which I'm guessing might relate to Ralph Macchio, the editor. I'm not sure, but. Your thoughts on this looming cover?
I really enjoy this cover. It not only focuses your attention on Doom as he appears just below the title, but you get the Christmas motif. Anybody who follows Ben Grimm is interested in the Yancey Street gang story, and this promises that. I like the little hidden homages, like the DeFalco's Deli.
Yep.
I hadn't even thought of the Mac Ray being Ralph Macchio. That makes sense. I've looked at some of these other names and wondered who they were, because you have a Heather and a Jason and a Lonnie hidden in there.
It wouldn't surprise me if those were the kids of the writer or the artists or something. Yeah.
It's just a really nice cover, and it really would have stood out in 19. When did this come out? Christmas of 91, I assume. It really would have stood out at that time when we were making a change to more posing of single figures, and this has a large cast of characters.
And I like the way that the wreath on the building or on the bridge there just falls right underneath Doom's, you know, cloak there. So that wreath could be a part of his festive gear as well.
Right. A way to celebrate the holidays in Latveria.
Exactly. Exactly. The story, Miracle on Yancey Street, was plotted, penciled, and scripted by the team of Paul Ryan and Tom DeFalco, and inked by Danny Bullinati. So we start inside the Four Failures Plaza on Christmas Eve, where Reed is resetting Ben's broken arm, an injury he received in a recent battle with Dreadface. A specially constructed cast is placed on his big, ugly orange arm, with Johnny using flame powers to set the cast.
Because science.
Because science. an old friend of Ben's, has turned up at the building. It's his old buddy, William Slugger Sokolowski, who grew up with Ben on Yancey Street. They head out to a local bar to catch up, and Slugger asks Ben to help locate his son, Jimmy. Slugger believes Jimmy's been getting into drugs based on how moody and distant and listless he's become. Or he's helping his dad repair the family B&B and is just getting, a little irritated by the old man. He seems to be leaping to conclusions here, but this is even worse than usual right now. And again, for a teenage boy, usual is usually pretty bad. Other drug users on Yancey Street have been going missing. So Slugger's concerned, and he hopes that the thing, because he grew up on Yancey Street, and despite that, he went on to be somebody, could find his son and convince him to steer clear of the drug life, stay on the straight and narrow, and Ben promises to give it his best shot. On Yancey Street, a drug delivery kid is being followed by a strange dude, probably a narc or a cop. The boy is surrounded by another man, identical to the first, and abducted. The guy on a nearby rooftop sees this all take place, and this young kid begins drumming away on the rooftop. Back at Four Failures, Johnny finds a Christmas present that he had bought Alicia, quote unquote, for Christmas, before remembering that he actually bought it for his wife, Lijah the Skrull, because Johnny is not that bright and kind of easy to fool. Johnny hears actual Alicia lament about her time away, telling Sue to dispose of all the possessions her imposter accumulated while she was gone. So Johnny dumps the package in the trash. So sad. Johnny then runs into Franklin, who's struggling with a package of Christmas decorations, which he's trying to set up because everyone's sad because Johnny and Alicia won't be married and Uncle Ben broke his arm. They need Christmas now more than ever. Johnny promises to do his best to make that happen. Back on Yancey Street, the thing is searching for Slugger's kid, only to be smacked in the face by a snowball. He follows a kid he sees running off, but slips on a patch of ice and goes sprawling in the garbage. He blames the cast, he is sure, for throwing him off balance because science. And then Ben soon finds himself face to face with the current iteration of the Yancey Street gang, Dictionary Dawson, Little Larry Lee, Manny Merengues, Rhythm Ruiz, the drummer from a few pages back, Lug Wrench Lebowski, and the scrappy gal, Two-Fisted Tommy Boyd. The youths wonder why their enemy is on their turf. But when Ben tells them that he's looking for Jimmy Sokolowski, they tell him what they know about his abduction, and they know the warehouse where he was taken, and they all head that way. They break into the abandoned warehouse and do battle with a group of the same men who abducted the kid, but they are actually robots. And here at the midpoint of the issue, we see a shadowy, cloaked figure, which makes this a good place to take a break and talk about this first half, because I'm just saying the story is about to take a fascinating turn. So before we move into a truly doomtabulous direction, what do we think of the first half of this story, Kirk?
I'm really enjoying it. At this point, you don't know where Dr. Doom, who appears prominently on the cover, is going to factor into this, because you're dealing with street kids disappearing. How is the ruler of Latveria going to play into street level crime?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously he's being framed if it's bad.
Yeah.
We have to wonder what is going to happen. And I really like the building. As a reader, you don't want to just have half the issue being a battle. You want to know what's going on, who these people are. You really want to start to care about what the plot is behind everything. And DeFalco and Ryan have really done a great job in leading us up to this.
I definitely think we're getting off to a good start here. We got a nice combo of the family dynamics, focus on Ben and his past. We're laying in some groundwork for this plot. I do kind of feel sorry for Johnny. I mean, we know plenty of fellas who this exact thing has happened to. You marry a gal only to find out years later she's not really the woman you thought you married, if you know what I mean. You know, instead, turns out she's an alien shapeshifter. I mean, it happens. It's underreported, but it happens. If,
I believe it is a legal cause for divorce in most states.
I would think. And also, his plan to give a gift that he bought for one lady, to give that to a different lady. You know, Johnny does not have a long history of making good moves in the romance department, but I'm not sure about this one either, Johnny. Just
I'm beginning
not
to
sure.
think that Johnny is what we would call a barely functioning adult.
You know, sometimes, you know, your family connections. I mean, this guy has Richard's privilege. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
Clearly,
exactly.
Clearly. Nepotism for the win here. Again, I don't want to make any assumptions about your, you know, your line of work, Kirk, but in my job, I do recognize my privilege. I always get a few weeks off at the holidays. Evidently, Reed does not give his team any days off. They are in the office. They are working late in Christmas Eve. That is not cool.
Well, what would we expect from Richards the tyrant?
It's just not right. And, you know, they didn't go into details here, you know, specifically, but the Yancey Street Gang circa 1992 is pretty diverse. That's cool because, as everyone knows, street gangs are noted for their long-term commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. So
they were definitely ahead of their time. And let's not forget that the drummer who witnessed the abduction does not speak. So sure. He's not only a person of color, but he does not speak
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
Let's his music speak for him.
I do have one technical question, and I want to be delicate here. I've never really thought about the details of Ben's rocky biology. And no, I'm not going there. Because it seems like he actually must have bones that can break, which can be set by a cast outside of the rocks to set the bone. That doesn't make sense. And frankly, I'm not sure we should trust Reed's knowledge in this area. Personally, I think he might be punking Ben.
For Ben, it could just be a rock cramp. Can rocks cramp, perhaps?
I don't. Do they, if rocks break, do rocks have a long history of being broken and then growing back together? Did I miss that day in geology? I'm not sure. Evidently, Reed did. I mean, okay.
Reed was probably too busy cleaning up after Johnny. Johnny probably had an accident somewhere in the lab.
Would not doubt that. I would not. Okay. That's our intermission. Let's get back to part two of this. So we find Ben and the Yancey Streeters fighting their way through robots, and he does find Jimmy on an examination table. But when Ben gets too close, he's blasted. Oh my gosh, it's him. It's Dr. Doom. Yes, Ben, it is. And the issue has just stepped up in a big way. Doom pointing out that Ben is a slow and clumsy, as he is a cretinous gargoyle, explains to Ben that he hardly need explain himself to a witless, insufferable buffoon. But he does actually decide to explain. You see, Doom is destined to become master of the world. We know this. But I have little interest in ruling a drug-addicted populace. My only desire is to eradicate this will-sapping, mind-stealing plague. In other words, he's fighting a one-Doom war on drugs. Because of course he would. In his kindness and mercy, Doom informs the Yancey Streeters that their age protects them from his true wrath. But Ben refuses to believe Doom's intentions, operating from his clear anti-Latverian immigration bias. He's just a foreigner trying to make it on the mean streets of New York. And what does Ben think of that? It's disgraceful. After shouting out his infantile war cry about it being the time to clobber something, Doom's force field puts an end to that. And then calmly and rationally, using small words so Ben will understand, Doom says that as part of research towards eradicating addiction and its myriad terrible consequences, that, I mean, yes, he's been abducting, I guess you could say, expendable subjects for his experiments, you know, people that wouldn't be missed, you know.
For the greater good.
For the greater good. Unfortunately, because they are little morons being led by a big moron, the damage that Ben and the Yancey Streeters have done to the lab leads inextricably to Doom making an obvious, though tragic, decision. Your bumbling interference has convinced me to pursue other, more rewarding endeavors at this juncture. Thanks to you, there will be no cure. In other words, every drug-related death that has happened in the Marvel U over the past 3 decades, everyone can be laid at the big, ugly, orange feet of one Benjamin J. Grimm. You can't lay that on me, Ben mumbles, but deep down he knows. We all know. For Doom has spoken the truth. Ben recovers from Doom's blasts, and the Yancey Streeters and Jimmy, who has been freed, meet him on the streets, and Ben finally makes one good decision. Doom ain't the kind of guy to leave any evidence behind. And with a quabwoom, the lab does indeed go away. And Ben is still thinking about Doom's words. They're haunting him. He wonders if he really did screw up. Yeah, you did. Jimmy is reunited with his father, and the Yancey Streeters grudgingly agree that it was nice to work with the Thing, but they still, you know, get a kick me sign on his big, ugly orange backside. Back inside the plaza, Johnny and Franklin decorate the tree with a long, stretchy arm helping put the star on top. Sue nabbed Johnny's gift that he had thrown in the trash, and he decides to actually go ahead and give it to Alicia, something about the first step to rebuilding her life. And on the last page, Thing arrives in a sour mood, having been bested by his better, and also having had his pockets picked by the Yancey Streeters. Ben's sour mood is calmed when Sue approaches with Mistletoe, and he gets pecks on his big, ugly, rocky cheeks from both her and Alicia, becoming a little bashful. Ben turns to the reader in the final panel. And Kirk, can you read for us the last line of the comic?
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Thank you. The end. So what did we think of the second half of this awesome issue? Oh, spoilers.
It was even better because we get Dr. Doom in this one.
Hello.
The first half was great. Second half, even greater.
Anytime you can read a comic book that is ostensibly about the Fantastic Four, and there's a lot more Dr. Doom in it than there is Reed Richards, I don't know. I think that's a win.
I love that Doom tells Ben that, you know, he could finish him off, but because he has that broken arm, that he wouldn't be able to savor that victory. So
yeah,
Doom is all about the, you know, the fair play. So he just leaves him to wallow in the defeat and knowing that all the drug deaths will be laid on his head from now on, and that Doom is obviously better than him.
A lot of people don't know this, his full name, Victor Compassion Von Doom. It is his middle name. I'm just saying. You know, this one thing that's interesting about Ben that we know from other stories that he personally, he is an observer of Hanukkah. but as a good-hearted fella, he's sharing in with his friends and family and decorating the building for Christmas and wishing us a Merry Christmas. So I think that is an ever-loving, blue-eyed, kind thing to do. Good on you, Ben.
Yes, he could easily point out to Johnny that he celebrates Hanukkah while Johnny is putting up Christmas decorations and forgetting that. You know, I mean, he's only known him at this point for like 30 years. Not a very bright guy.
Yeah, I don't know if we mentioned this, but he's kind of a dummy. So, yeah. So, let me ask you this question about Christmas decorating. Because this is something I've seen in fiction. I've seen this scene before where we have the decorating of the tree on Christmas Eve. So my question for you is, over there at Fort Spencer, when does the commandant assign, you know, Ensign Kirk with the job of decorating the house or decorating the tree? Like
my wife would.
What are the marching orders for you around there?
Her timeline is usually the Friday after Thanksgiving. She wants a tree up and by Saturday have it decorated. And I think she would probably kill me if I waited until Christmas Eve to try putting up a tree and decorating it. I mean, she gets stressed if I haven't started packing a few days before a trip. She's not going to tolerate Christmas Eve decorating. I grew up with a mother who not only was a procrastinator, but a bargain hunter. So she would wait until Christmas Eve, get a very cheap tree somewhere. And that's when we would do it, just like in the movies and the Fantastic Four headquarters. But my wife, no, that's not going to fly.
See, my theory about Valentine's Day is you go out with the missus the weekend after Valentine's Day. You say it's because of, you know, problem getting a reservations and the lines are going to be so long at the fancy restaurants. You also have the advantage of three magic words, discount Valentine's candy.
I like that plan. I like that plan quite a bit.
I'm just saying.
Well, we here at Fort Spencer squirrel away a large plastic container filled with previous holiday clearance to save for the next holiday. It is not unheard of for children to get pumpkin-shaped Reese's in their Christmas stocking because Santa likes a deal too.
Yes. Yes, he does.
He has a lot to buy. Let's cut the guy some slack.
I'm not saying the Quarter Bin podcast is the official podcast of the North Pole, but I'm not saying it.
Exactly.
In my case, even before I was doing tons of teaching from home, like the last few years, being a professor is not a job where you're in the office, where you're on campus Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. So I've always done a lot of my planning and grading and prep and reading at home, which means it does fall to me to do at least some of the basics of the decorating. So over the next week or two from when we're recording this after Thanksgiving, I'll grab a box or two from the closet. And one day it might be switching out the dishes or the glasses or the pictures on the wall or putting up some angels, you know, all through the first week of December. So you know, it's usually all decorated by then. Of course, Mrs. Quarterbin does get to put her finishing touches on it.
Fine-tune things.
Yeah, exactly. But I do a lot of the literal and figurative heavy lifting of the decorating season. We have to talk about, obviously, the star of this issue, Mr. Von Doom himself. What do we think of his characterization? I'll say I like the subtlety here. I actually do like the idea that drug addiction is not a good thing for a ruler.
Right.
I don't know. It kind of makes people unpredictable. And obviously Latveria has some really good, you know, healthcare system. That's just expensive. It's just good. It's just good benevolent leadership and I think wise stewardship to help get your people free from drug addiction.
Being a Christmas issue, I kind of felt like there was a Jesus analogy where Jesus wants us to choose him of our own free will, and Doom wants his citizens to serve him with free will, not be drug addicted and compromised. They must realize that he is their rightful earthly ruler.
It seems reasonable. You know, but anytime you can add something to Doom that you can understand or even sympathize with, that's good. Yes, his methods would be technically inexcusable, I suppose. But it does help build out his character, I think. What was the phrase you saw when you were looking this up?
Christmas classic.
Christmas classic. I don't think that's all that overblown.
I don't either. There's not enough Christmas issues where it's really set around Christmas. It may be the season where there's snow falling and they're gift shopping, but you know, this is obviously much more focused. They're decorating the tree, they're exchanging gifts. This is a true Christmas issue, even though Johnny forgot that Ben was Jewish.
You know, but he did get 75. Well, actually, not counting himself, he got 67% of his teammates correct. That's like where I come from. That's a D. He passed. It's something for Johnny.
That's pretty good, probably.
So, I mean, come on. That is pretty good.
He did mistake his fiance for a Skrull. So.
Okay, look, I don't want to overshare, but we've all been there. I mean, I do think there's something subtle in there about marrying someone to find out they're not really who you thought they were, but it's usually not that extreme.
No, not quite that extreme.
Usually it's just, you actually read comic books? Key that I found with a good marriage is your wife doesn't need to be a geek, but it helps if she understands geeks.
Indeed.
That's about as much as we can reasonably ask.
Did you happen to notice that there is a Mile High Comics ad in this issue advertising new comic books at 50% off?
I actually did have another question for you about the ads in here. I did have, as I flip, I was a member. There it is. I was a member of the NICE subscription service.
Now, that was the New Issue Comics Express, if I remember correctly.
That is correct. I don't think it wouldn't have been my first mail order, but it was my first mail order subscription. And I actually do need to give a shout out. If you flip towards the end, it's the page where Ben has the kick me sign.
Kick me, I'm stupid.
I've got to say, as I flip through some of these 90s Marvel books, the coolometer is often a complete disgrace. This one's not bad. Close to the top, we got Dr. Seuss, Guns N' Roses, Mystery Science Theater 3000. As we drop down a little bit, we get Northern Exposure, the Olympic basketball team right in the middle, nostalgia for the 1980s. Remember, this was the 1990s. Then down towards the bottom, we get Lobo. Okay, that one just made me laugh. That's pretty funny. We get Herman's Head. Remember that TV show? Parodies of A Christmas Carol. And then last, the most uncool thing, people who don't like coolometers. That's not a bad coolometer. I'm just saying, I've got to give someone credit for that one.
Yeah, I like that one, especially with Dr. Seuss and Guns N' Roses at the top.
There are not a lot of lists where those two are listed back to back.
Well, it's an interesting combination of items to be on there, but I do take issue with Herman's Head being that low down on the list. I do remember liking at least the blonde on the show quite a bit, as the staff at Fort Spencer are quite partial to blondes. But other than that, it's a pretty solid list.
That's not bad.
I don't really remember the Barbie twins being a big thing. I know they had a Topps comic, but they are right there in the middle.
Yeah.
Other than the Topps comic, I don't really remember anything about them.
I think it's great that Cable is right in the middle and Lobo is down towards the bottom.
And this would have been around the time of Lobo's miniseries, if I'm remembering correctly.
So
with Keith Giffen and Simon Bisley.
So that one made me laugh.
They were really, really taking a shot.
Yep.
You have your BMG Music Service offer of 8 compact discs or cassettes for the price of not one, but one half. I certainly took part in that. That's how I grew my early music collection.
Quick, off the top of your head, what are some of the ones you would have had off of this list?
Well, I see Boys to Men, which I certainly had. Van Halen, which I certainly had. I see the lovely Paula Abdul, which I most certainly had. I had her poster in my room amongst the comic book promo posters. Paula earned a place of honor. Thank you, Spencer Gifts.
See, for me, I was I got Chicago, U2, Supertramp, underrated band. I'm just throwing that out.
I love the name, but I couldn't tell you anything that they sang.
You know what you need to do, Kirk? You need to take the long way home from here. So,
what you did there. You've educated me.
You know, I'm going to be bold. The Doors, overrated.
You know you're going to get some hate mail on that. Send all complaints to Gerald Albrecht, the yard sale artist.
Thank you. That is the complaint department. You got to figure, working full-time at Longbox Crusade headquarters like Laurel does, it's got to mostly be handling listener complaints. That's got to be the full job. So start to finish, even the ads, even the Marvel page, excellent. I mean, we've sort of spoiled this. We know where this is going, but Mr. Kirk, is this comic book worth a quarter?
I would say absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind. I mean, I would pay cover price at least just for this cover with Dr. Doom looming over Ben and the Yancey Street Gang. And that's high praise, because I prefer to get my books at a discount.
Yeah, darn right you do. Completely agree. Verdict on Fantastic Four 361, an FF issue where Mr. Stretchy Buns only appears on four pages. I mean, it's basically, he's like the framing sequence. He's on the first two pages and the last two pages. And then other than that, it's a, this is basically a Marvel 2-in-1, right? With the Thing and Doom. You got the holidays. You've got fighting drug addiction. Look, this is a comic book destined to be a Hallmark Christmas movie someday. I'm just saying, I'm saying save this issue. One day it's going to be a wall book because of that.
I'm looking forward to Candace Cameron Bure playing Sue Storm.
Oh, that could work. That could work, Kirk.
Indeed.
All they need to do is work in a gazebo into this story somewhere. I'm sorry, it's storyboards itself. This, again, a total quarter bin steal. Glad to have you on talking about this one, Kirk.
I am thrilled to be here. I really enjoyed it.
Where can our listeners find you on social media and possibly, maybe, with fingers crossed, on the occasional podcast?
I am at Big Five Army on both Twitter and Instagram. I have so far stayed loyal to those two and not joined any of these other hives and mastodons yet. Unless somebody wants to offer me an enlistment bonus, so far I'm holding out for some good stuff. And right now, I'm appearing on the podcast with the man, the myth, and the legend, Professor Allen.
Hey, how about that? Always good to chat with you, buddy.
Good to chat with you.
So that wraps up our coverage of the epic Fantastic Four 361, bringing episode 188 of the Quarter Bin podcast to a close. Next month, first, we're not going to continue the genre month connection into 2023. That's been fun in 2022, but sometimes it's time to move on. And I don't totally know which order we're going to cover the next few issues, but between 189 and 190, in some order, we're going to be looking at the Maze Agency number 12 from Innovation, cover dated May 1990, and the Falcon number 1. This is the 4-issue miniseries for Marvel, cover dated November 1983, again, in some order.
Both excellent choices.
If you have any questions or comments about this issue, the episode, Holiday Comics, All Things Dr. Doom, Hot Dates at Ollie's, or the podcast in general, feel free to contact me. Until next episode, I'm Professor Allen, and I'll see you in the quarter bin.
The Quarter Bin Podcast is part of the Relatively Geeky family of podcasts. Show notes and links are available at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com, where the podcasts Uncovering the Bronze Age and Short Box Showcase also make their home. Links to Facebook and Twitter are there as well. Feedback for the show is welcome at relativelygeeky@gmail.com. And if you like what we've got going here, please leave a review and a rating in iTunes. It'll help more people discover the show. Thanks again for listening.
We rented my grandparents' house for Thanksgiving as an Airbnb.
Right.
And the people that rented it are expecting 15 for their Thanksgiving dinner. And I was like, that's just too many people. That's like going out to dinner at a comic convention. That's not hanging out for dinner at with your family in a house.
Exactly. My sister's just going to end up smaller for her this year. My father's passed away, so we're not going down there. And so instead of 9 or 10, I think she's going to have 6 this year. She's still trying to convince her husband, I really don't need to make 3 pies for 6 people.
I might be on his side on that one.
I know.
You can't go wrong with extra dessert. I mean,
Nope. I am the cook in this house for the most part. So my wife's making green bean casserole Thursday morning, but I've got doing the smoked turkey breast.
Oh, nice.
I got that. Then I make good mac and cheese. Oh, we get a ham too. So we get mac and cheese. It's all about the leftovers.
Oh, yes.
So we get the mac and cheese. M usually brings way more biscuits than are necessary, but we lived for 15 years in Virginia, so we know the value of a ham biscuit.
I love a biscuit.
So we got ham biscuits all weekend.
It's a Southern staple here.
Exactly. It's got the cranberry, got the steak, got it all. We got it all.
Well, I'm jealous of all that except for you having to do the cooking. I have to do most of the cooking during the week, and thankfully for special occasions, my wife takes over.
Yes, that's fair.
To eat, but I do not enjoy cooking at all.
Yeah, my mom was an excellent cook, so trained me in my teen years to be more than self-sufficient at it.
But my mother did the same. She was afraid that my sister and I might marry somebody just to take care of us, so she made sure we knew how to do things, including cooking.
Yeah, I know it's hard to believe, Kirk, but I was quite a catch. That's all I'm saying.
I believe you. I do. It's
quite a catch. That's it. Literally, when my wife met me, I was wearing headphones. It was connected to a Walkman or to something at that time, but I was wearing headphones, and I did have comics in my dorm room. So she knew what she was getting, man.
Yeah. The signs are all there.
She knew the signs were all there. No excuse.
It's funny to me. I mean, there's no way to hide my nerdiness. And my wife, when I was her boyfriend, it was like, well, that's so cute that you like that. That's kind of cool that you actually know this artist. As her husband, it's like, do you really need another comic? Don't you have enough of those?
I am taking the missus weekend after Thanksgiving to GalaxyCon here in Columbus. And her job is to stand in Jonathan Frakes line to get a signature for her brother for Christmas from Captain Riker.
That's a good plan. Always
that is her job.
Always send the wife / girlfriend to get the autographs, because they tend to get more autographs, sketches, whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
They see 100 of us. They don't see as many of them.
Exactly. Somehow I've convinced her that counts as a date, sort of like when you go to Ollie's. It's the same.
Nice.
I don't know what magic we've been able to figure out there, but
hey, as long as it's working, we'll stick with it.
So speaking of connections, hey, how about that FF and Dr. Doom, huh?
That's quite a connection.
How about that Christmas? How about that Christmas story we got here?
Yes, indeed. Okay. You know, I looked it up last night, and it's out of stock on my comic shop, which kind of surprised me for a 90s, mainstay title. And the ones on eBay often refer to it as a Christmas classic.
Let's give it that Christmas classic treatment. So are you ready to roll?
Yes, indeed.
All right. Let me bring us in and...